Hello and welcome to Music Weekly. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up in this week's podcast, Hot Chips Joe Goddard on new album One Life Stand and his love of two-step and funky.
I try not to steal or replicate something completely, but I kind of in a magpie-like way take elements of things that I like from one time and one region and try and mix them with elements of something else.
We'll be reviewing Khalees, College and DVA in Singles Club, and we speak to Californian indie rockers, local natives from the iconic French Kiss label, no me neither, who will also be performing an exclusive live track for us.
You know, everybody's kind of got their hands in certain things. You know, we've got like four people singing all at one given time, and we've got, you know, two or even three people sometimes playing drums.
That's all in Music Weekly. As usual, I'm joined by Rosie Swash. Hi, Rosie.
Hello, Alexis. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And how are you?
I'm very good.
Excellent. What have you been doing this week, Rosie?
I had a big weekend.
Yeah.
But it was mainly revolved around a house party, and it seems to me that the Glee soundtrack is big with a lot
of people.
I've been
listening to the Glee soundtrack. I think it's quite good. I mean, some of it is like listening to an X Factor record,
exactly,
isn't it? But then other bits... I thought the version of Dancing With Myself that's done Rat Pack thing, I think that's very clever. And also I think it's quite clever the way it recontextualises a lot of songs in terms of them being sung by teenagers.
Exactly.
So
there was a good...
Alone by Heart.
Bust Your Windows, which is an R&B song that had passed me by before. I don't think it made it to this side of the Atlantic, but it's very good. So there was a lot of that going on.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. So we also welcome back to Music Weekly the esteemed journalist and go-to girl for all things urban music. It's Emma Warren. Hello, Emma.
Hello.
We did a feature last week on Soul Jazz.
Oh, yes.
You're involved with them, is that right?
Oh, I've done a couple of compilations for them. I did Stepper's Delight about 2 years ago.
Wicked.
And then we did Volume 2 recently, which is just out.
Fantastic. Excellent. Good stuff. Well, first up on the pod, it's Hot Chip. Their new album, One Life Stand, is out on Monday. It's kind of a return to form, so we thought it would be a good time to get Joe Goddard back on Music Weekly. Something that is evident on the new record, as well as on Joe's own label, Greco Roman, and in his DJ sets, is that he takes a lot of influence from both two-step and funky house. Rosie.
This is true. I can confirm this, having spoken to him. I wanted to speak to Joe because, not just because his DJ sets reflect those influences and the album itself, but because I read an interview that he did with Roscoe, which was just him, you know, waxing lyrical about his love of bassline and funky and two-step and where the UK dance scene is at the moment. And it was really wonderful to read, so I kind of wanted to get him on record talking about that because it influences One Life Stand quite a lot, I think.
Fantastic. So you'll be talking to Joe about his love of all things garage and two-step and funky shortly, Rosie. But to get everyone in the mood, first let's hear We Have Love from Hot Chip's new album.
I was very, very deep into two-step the first time around. I think I kind of got into it more as the music became more overground. The period leading up to Wookiee having a number one with Battle and Genius Crew and like Heartless and Pay As You Go all getting into the charts. And I thought that was just a brilliant time when quite bizarre records and very catchy, infectious records, but records that sounded very different to things that had been at the top of the charts previously, were getting like to number one and in the top 10. I thought it was brilliant. And I became really obsessed. I bought tons and tons of that vinyl.
When I was growing up, garage was considered to be a bit girly and almost a little bit naff. And if you were really into it, drum and bass was where it was. And it wasn't until much later that I actually... I started going to places like One Nation and there'd always be a garage room that I actually thought, oh, I really like this, but it was almost kind of seen as a cop-out to like...
Yeah, there was the whole like handbags and champagne and twice as nice kind of style of garage. And that was always considered to be... Well, it's less like Rude Boy. It has less of that kind of London, Jamaican kind of spirit to it than the kind of harder, more MC-led, more grimy side of garage. But for me, like coming from a kind of like middle class school in like Putney, the kind of expectations of a teenager from coming from that kind of place is that you like grunge music and kind of rock music and indie music and things. And to me, the whole like champagne and kind of like dressy side of garage seemed kind of appealing, like in a funny sort of way. Like I kind of liked the idea that, you know, it wasn't all about the kind of aggression. I liked how funky it could be and how like big the bass lines and things could be, and yet it's still kind of like kind of smooth and had amazing kind of grooves and things. I really like MJ Cole productions, the way they could be quite like sexy and quite cool but have this real like amazing rhythms beneath them.
Judging by some of the younger DJs and producers like Joy Orbison and Brackles, it feels like it's like a sort of avant-garde take on what it used to be is coming full swing again. But then do you feel that it has just always been there and this is the latest development?
Yeah, I think absolutely there's a real interest in this. And I guess it kind of makes sense because it's all kind of something like 10 years, so it's about the right time for, like, if some guy had a younger brother 10 years ago and he was buying the records and his younger brother hear them, those things would seep into the younger brother's mind at a really crucial moment in his development and his ideas about music. And I think that's kind of a cool thing. Like, maybe it means that these young producers that are making music now have like a real kind of deep understanding of the rhythms and things, and they're really taking them to very different places now. But what the great thing at the moment is that tracks can move between different kinds of grooves within like 8 or 16 bars. Like the Joker track will be like two-step and then have a four to the floor beat and then have a dubstep feel. It doesn't seem like any of these young producers have any kind of rules in terms of what tracks should sound like. And they're taking in influences from techno and dubstep and all over the place, really. And old kind of rave ideas.
Do you think that the scene now, the crossover that you're seeing is because the internet makes it easier, you know, scenes aren't necessarily as local?
Yeah, there's a lot of movement between these kinds of things at the moment. You get that in the UK funky kind of rhythm that is around at the moment. It's, you know, it's the same rhythm, like a four to the floor beat with a added couple of snare hits, you know, in this particular pattern that is used in funky. It's the same thing as used in like reggaeton and different kinds of African dance music. Like I was over in Malawi last year, and on the radio a lot of the records had the same kind of drum beat, slightly slower. And I think the internet is allowing these different indigenous dance scenes to spread around the world and mutate obviously a lot quicker.
Any explicit UK funky influences on this album?
Yeah, there are, yeah. I mean, the track I Feel Better uses that kind of rhythm. In terms of the way that I put things together when I'm making music, I try not to steal or replicate something completely, but I kind of in a magpie-like way take elements of things that I like from one time and one region and try and mix them with elements of something else. Like the melody for the verses in I Feel Better was inspired by watching like an old Paul Simon track on YouTube. It's a song called like You're the One, I think, from an album they put out around like the year 2000. There was a live performance of it, a video of him playing with some African musicians and with this really nice like four to the floor groove and people playing really nice kind of African sounding guitar and keyboards and things over the top, and I wrote the music to that after listening to it. And then there's a kind of funky influence, I think, in the strings. It sounds a bit like Inner City or something like that, you know.
As someone who DJs around the country at various different nights a lot, is there one tune that you always pack and always play and know that it's going to get a great reception wherever you go?
I find at the moment that I'm booked at very different kinds of events at different times. Like if you're going around the UK at the moment and it's like a young crowd in like Nottingham or Bristol or London or like maybe in Glasgow or somewhere as well, like something like a new dubsteppy, like a Scream thing or a Joker production, or I thought like the Joker remix of Cruel Intentions by Simian Mobile Disco was an amazing record, and play that very regularly. I think it's a brilliant kind of poppy production that's constantly changing, and it's just really, really well made and exciting. But if you tried to play that in Europe, people like would very often be kind of scared off the dance floor by it. It feels like there's a kind of sea change happening, but it hasn't reached everywhere in the world yet.
Joe Goddard there with Rosie Swash, revealing her hitherto unhinted at raving past. I had no idea, Rosie, you were down twice as nice.
Yeah, I went to twice as nice.
Did you?
I've even been to twice as nice in Ibiza.
Wow.
But that was
amazing.
More recently revisiting my past.
Wow, okay. I really didn't know that. I really didn't know you were into garage and stuff like that. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
What do we think of the Hot Chip album? Emery, you've heard it. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I really like it. I love the fact that Hot Chip are so fully in the world that they're in. Then there's nothing dilettante-ish about their involvement with dance music. It's just normal. It's natural. Mm. They've been fully in as probably as long as they had ears. And that expresses it. And that expresses itself across all the things they do, like you mentioned before, the kind of the DJing, the label, and all the music. And I feel like UK dance music has been so influential over so many different genres, but that's not often represented in the mainstream terribly well. But Hot Chip do it in a really intuitive way, and it sounds great.
Tell me where you've been to. Nowhere that you shouldn't do. Tell me what you're good for. I can tell you something too. Where have you been staying? Tell me what you're playing. Hope it's not my conscience, but it keeps complaining.
I was quite surprised to hear them talking so much about things like two-step and funky, because the thing that I thought sort of made influence on it was actually sort of early Chicago house. I got a real sense that sort of sparse, those kind of early Chicago productions from it. I always think, on a really basic level, the songs are just brilliant, and the songs on the last album, Made in the Dark, weren't very good. I think that was where that album fell down, rather than in terms of production or whatever. Rosie, do you like it? Are you a fan?
I love it. I think what people have seemed to be saying about this record compared to Made in the Dark is that they're now making the big tunes that everyone always hoped they would, and we knew they were capable of it, but I think Made in the Dark they went off a little bit on a tangent. Stuff like Wrestlers seemed a bit conceptual, really, and this is just fantastic. As we were talking about in the interview, the references, the influences rather, the funky and the two-step and all that is just one side of it. And I think the Chicago house that you were talking about is a huge part. I even think there's loads of stuff in there, stuff that you wouldn't even pick up on. So if you're allergic to garage of any form, don't be put off this record, because it's really only one element of it.
Brothers, I would give my life for my brothers. When we're driving and it's late with my brother sat next to me.
A lot of times when you get bands that are sort of straddling, you know, for want of a better word, the indie rock divide or whatever, it tends to feel a little bit bolted on. It tends to feel like, oh, we're going to try and have a dubstep influence in this, you know what I mean? And it's sort of bolted on in a quite unnatural way, and it's very perhaps hard to get those two things to mesh together well. They seem to do it incredibly well, and as you say, it doesn't seem, you know, it seems totally intuitive. They clearly know their onions.
It also seems like a very kind of happy and quite loved up album, you know. It sounds like someone who's really having a nice time in their life, and that's really lovely, and it's always nice to hear people who are in that happy state expressing that musically. I have to say, I quite like it when Hot Chip get a little bit nastier, you know, that lyric on The Warning where they say Hot Chip will break your legs, snap off your head. That's one of my favourite lyrics ever, and to do it kind of in that lovely whispered way over all that beautiful music, I've always thought it was brilliant.
They don't look like people who would do that to you.
But then that's the appeal, isn't it? It's that, you know, they're kind of pretending to be all nice, but actually what they're saying to you underneath it all is that they're just going to snap your head off. I quite approve.
Oh, good. Well,
very pleased to hear it. Musically, of
musically,
course.
Of course, of course, of course. One Life Stand by Hot Chip is out now. Time now on Music Weekly for Singles Club, and we start with Rosie's choice.
Like a boat out to sea, the silence was too deafening.
That was A Cappella by Kelis and David Guetta. Rosie, that was your choice?
Yes, Kelis and David Guetta. Not to be expected, but they're working on her new album together. I picked this for various reasons. One of them is that I kind of took a bit of a perverse interest in Kelis last year.
Really?
But, well,
could
not perverse.
Would you like to explain your perverse interest
like
in Kelis?
In her personal life, should I say, I was quite intrigued.
Carry on, yeah.
In her divorce from Nas, and right. They were both very open about it, and it was very bitter. And you shouldn't be interested in those things. Mm. That's what I mean by perverse. Nothing more, Alexis.
No. It's just you expressed yourself in a curious way.
I always had a bit of a problem with Kelis as an artist. I thought she wasn't particularly bright or interesting. I thought she was really well styled and she knew what she was doing. But actually, when it came down to it, I thought there was something missing. And actually, in this track. But what she's singing about is her son, who's like 2 or 3 months old or something like that. And it's in the lyrics, which you couldn't pick up in that sample, and you maybe wouldn't pick up so immediately because of the kind of song that it is, are incredibly maternal and warm and so natural and honest.
Wow.
Exactly how you would imagine it would feel to give birth to someone and have all these new feelings. And my whole life was a cappella until you, is basically saying you've brought this new dimension to my life, which I find really touching considering all this nastiness that was going on in her personal life, and suddenly she's saying, no, look, I'm so happy because I've got a kid. And then you've got the music, then you've got David Guetta's influence, which is just like... You know, it's very metallic, industrial-sounding house, and it doesn't suit, you know, it works against what she's actually singing about, which I think, you know, serves to sort of highlight the warmth in it. So altogether, and I really like it. I think the melody's great.
Yeah, I thought it was good as well. I'm not very conversant with the oeuvre of David Guetta. The simple reason, every time I read an interview with David Guetta, when he's sort of talking about this sort of superstar DJ lifestyle and stuff like that, I always think he comes across as a bit of a plonker. And for that reason, I've kind of shied away from his music. And I assumed his music would be kind of like Tiesto-style banging trance awfulness. And I don't know if that's... This track is sort of... symptomatic or representative of what he normally does. It's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. I thought it actually worked rather well. Mm. Emma, what did you make of it?
Well, I always like to see American hip-hop and R&B royalty kind of connecting with their house roots because house is an American phenomenon.
Yep.
Much like jazz, it's not really recognised in the States, and all those early house people had to come to the UK to get anything. I mean, a lot of those guys actually still live in Europe. Lots of them in Berlin, funnily enough, like many others. So I really like to see that, and I think that's a good thing. I'd like to see those kind of people connecting more with it directly, so maybe I would really like to hear something a bit more jacking, maybe, but, you know, I'm a kind of old school. Literally old school.
I think that's an interesting point. I think there is definitely an interesting point there, that in America... house music is definitely still seen as a slightly ghettoized thing, and it's very specifically a gay thing. Mm. You know what I mean?
Unless it's the kind of strip club version.
Unless it's the sort of awful strip club version, yeah, absolutely. And for that reason, I always think there's a certain sort of bravery and boldness about, you know, I remember Missy Elliott sort of mucking about with kind of house beats on a Missy So Addictive album and things like that. You think, actually, this is, you know, quite a big leap to take. It's quite a sort of amazing leap of faith for an artist like that to take. A Cappella by Kelis and David Guetta is out now, and you can get it from iamkelis.com. Now, it's Emma's selection. That was Ganja by DVA on the Hyperdub label. Emma, that was your choice. Tell us a little bit about it.
So Scratcher is a guy who's come through grime, and he's currently the breakfast DJ on Rinse FM.
Right.
So it's called Rinse's Grimy Breakfast. At 8 a.m, between 8 a.m. and 11 a.m, if you tune into Rinse, which is a fantastic radio station. I mean, I really like all that stuff. I just think there's such a lot of incredible talent. Rinse sometimes describe themselves as like the XFM of street music, and I really think they have that role. So Scratcher's cool. Hyperdub's a fantastic label. They've just had their fifth birthday, and they keep on putting out really interesting music, really across the board. Part of the reason I chose this was, apart from the fact I just think it's a really good record, I love that synth line, is that it really represents to me what's going on kind of in UK street music. And that's an incredibly fertile kind of cross-fertilisation of all different types of music. It's actually, you can really only pin genres on it from the outside.
Absolutely, yeah.
In it, it really doesn't exist. I mean, Scratch is a grime DJ. This is like a kind of funky house record. It's also kind of dubstep-y.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, it's only kind of from the outside that it would kind of work under a sort of genre or pigeonhole.
What genre would people put on it? Would they say it's a funky record?
Well, what they might do is they might align it to, I mean, you talked about Joker earlier, who again is really fantastic new producer from Bristol, really talented, and people kind of describe him as like kind of wonky, G-funky, Bristol bassy, dubstep-y.
Is he Purple Wow?
Absolutely, yeah. So there's
no, seriously, a friend of mine actually doesn't believe that Purple Wow exists. Yeah. She thinks I made it up.
So you didn't make it up, because there's actually a whole kind of purple family, and there's guys like Guido as well who are coming through from there. So, you know, Bristol's always been this kind of home of bass, and there's a lot of really interesting music coming out from there. I also think there's something interesting about kind of what dance music or where dance music sits in culture at the moment, because you had that time in the early 2000s where suddenly, you know, the sort of Strokes happened and the indie-verse exploded, and dance music was kind of marginalised culturally. Obviously, it still happened. Clubs were still full. Drum and bass clubs were still full. You know, lots of little things were growing on the sidelines. But all of a sudden, you know, the recession hits, people want to go out on a Saturday night, and dance music seems to have a kind of relevance generally that it didn't have before.
What Emma was talking about before, which I think is interesting, is the crossover. We're going to exhaust my knowledge of this scene pretty rapidly, yeah. But from what I can tell is exactly what you were saying about we're not pinning genres on things and we're not trying, and it almost the opposite to how things used to be, is that you were very cliquey about what you did and the music that you made. That doesn't seem to exist anymore. And to me, when I was listening to it, it's sort of tribal funky, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. And I also think it's incredibly inventive and strange, really strange sound. And that's something that I kind of didn't, not dismissed funky at first or any of those kind of genres, but I've been surprised going back to it just how strange some of these songs are and how inventive people are willing to be. I think it's a brilliant track.
Excellent. I liked it as well. I thought it was suitably odd and suitably catchy. If you heard,
but it did really draw my attention to Rinse FM again, which started up when I was young and is quite very different now from how it was when I was young. And I saw that they're getting a petition together to get a proper license, which I didn't know. I thought it was quite sweet. So maybe you should go to Rinse FM and sign a petition, because I did.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Good campaigning journalism. That's what we want on this show. And finally, it's my selection. That's my choice. That's A Real Hero by College, about whom I know very, very little. I picked this record up off the mail out from Fonica, the dance shop in London. I know College are French. I know it's off an EP, which is limited to 300 copies only on vinyl, which is supposed to be a sort of faux soundtrack EP to some sort of 80s American college thing. I don't know. I really liked it. I think two things I'm really interested in at the moment, two kinds of music I've gone back to and I'm really sort of obsessed with at the moment, sort of early 80s synth pop and that sort of super smooth, coked out kind of 80s pop, Tango in the Night by Fleetwood Mac, that sort of thing. You laugh, Rosie, you know, it's no laughing matter.
You described it as coked out. Well, I was expecting you to say.
But you know what I mean? It's that kind of like records that sound like they've been produced by people wearing rubber gloves. Or you know what I mean? and I thought this was a really, really good sort of homage to that kind of sound, while having a sort of unique flavour of its own. It sounded like something Don Johnson might be driving around the streets of Miami to on a hot night. And the first series of Miami Vice, of course, when they have those very long sections with no talking, people just driving about and this kind of music in the background. So I really liked it. Did anybody else like it? Rosie, did you like it?
I did like it. Excellent. I love the simplicity of it. There's almost nothing to it. It's so simple, and I like that a lot. There's also an atmosphere to it, which I found very seductive and kind of adolescent in a way. There's something about it which, made me think of Drive, some sort of arty film where they drive around a European capital.
Wow.
On a warm summer's night. But there, something very adolescent and navel-gazing about it in a good way.
Excellent. Emma, what did you make of it?
It's interesting you talk about that kind of 80s Miami Vice, sort of Fleetwood Mackie things. I think there's a real interest in that, again, in the kind of broader Balearic network.
Well, I am a zeitgeist cipher, so yeah, exactly. I expect there is, yeah.
Exactly. So, as well as places like DJ History, there's a website called testpressing.org that's kind of really collecting a lot of, it's very, really broad. You get all sorts of different things, like bizarre Brazilians playing flutes made out of funny things, but some of this kind of stuff as well.
Absolutely.
So I think you're not alone in that interest. I think there's lots of other people that are interested in it as well. I really like it. I like to me, it's a kind of Saint-Étienne type feeling.
Yeah.
I love that feeling of that, very warm, kind of slightly isolated, that sort of teenagery feeling of feeling really introspective, but really kind of fabulously isolated. And I think that's a really nice feeling that they've expressed really kind of accurately in the music. One thing I really like, actually, Alexis, is this idea of finding music you don't know anything about. Because sometimes it's good just to kind of have the music and not always to have sort of knowledge or information around it and just let it, speak to you or not speak to you.
And hard to do that.
Yeah, it's really hard to do that. But also, in a way, I think it's quite interesting to listen to music like that. Mm. It reminds you that it is just music and it's not always a story.
I think one of the good ways to go about that, you can approach that sort of music in the Balearic way, and you're right, there's a lot of people like the Mountain of One and producers like that who are clearly drawing on that 80s sound, which was big as well on the original Balearic scene. I mean, Big Love by Fleetwood Mac's massive Balearic record. That's one way of approaching it. Or you can do what I did over Christmas, which is just get drunk and listen to Magic FM. And, it all comes flooding back to you, just the amazingness of Boy Meets Girl and things like that. You know what I mean? I think I'm actually quite serious about this. Mm. I think if you're slightly drunk, your sort of inhibitions about listening to slightly naff 80s music just completely out of the window, and it just becomes a question of, does this make me want to dance or laugh or cry, or does it da-da-da-da-da? And you end up listening to Hard to Say I'm Sorry by Chicago and thinking, this is the best record ever made. If you listen to Magic FM for more than 15 minutes, you will hear Almaz by Randy Crawford. They play that. It's like, you set your watch by it. Okay, well, that's A Real Hero by College. Thumbs up for that. Thumbs up for all three, I think, of the records that we brought in today. A Real Hero is out now on Flex, Belgian label. It's available to download all over the web from usual places. Anyway, we'd love to know your thoughts on our singles club choices. Come and find us on the blog. That's guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Okay, we've got another interview for you now. LA indie rockers Local Natives are signed to the wonderful French Kiss, the label owned by Les Savvy Favs, Sid Butler. Rosie, tell us a bit about Local Natives, the wonderful French Kiss label, and indeed Les Savvy Favs, Sid Butler.
Anyone that's been listening to this podcast for a while will know that I love Les Savvy Favs, New York post-punk group, and Sid Butler, the bassist, runs French Kiss. The Dodos are on there.
Oh, wicked. I like the Dodos.
And Les Savvy Favs are on
there. So they must be good.
and so when I hear that someone's been signed to them, I do tend to pay attention. There's lots of labels like that. You're always going to check them out. And so I caught up with Local Natives when they were in London to chat to them about their album Gorilla Manor. And I also got them to perform a track exclusively for us. So this is Aeroplanes.
great deal to say, to say to each other. I bet when I leave my body for the sky, the wait will be worth it. I love it all. So much I call.
Here with Local Natives, and we just heard their song Airplanes. So I'm going to start by asking you to introduce yourselves one by one.
My name is Kelsey, and I play piano, drums, and I sing in the band.
And my name's Matt, and I play the drums.
My name's Andy, and I play the bass.
So who wrote Airplanes, and is it, as far as I can tell, not so much a love song as a post-love song, but intertwined with being on tour? Because there seems to be a lot of international references in there,
you know. So it's kind of hard to say that I wrote the song, because how we all write songs, everyone throws in everyone kind of, it's a collaborative effort, but I wrote the lyrics and kind of I came with the basis of it and then brought it to everybody. But I actually wrote it about my grandfather, because I never got to know him. He died when I was 3, and so I would always learn stuff about him, about his life, about his character through stories my father would tell me. And he studied abroad in Japan. That was like one of the factors that I reflected on. But I was just thinking about him one day, and the song is kind of a reflection of me wishing that I could have spent time with him.
One of the things I like about the album is it reminded me a lot of one of my favourite albums from last year, and I don't know if you know it, which is Dropping the Writ by Cass McCombs, who is also a Californian. And also there's a little bit of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, a little, and they're obviously Laurel Canyon. So for me, I was like, maybe there is something in the air in California that produces this quite distinctive sound. Or maybe not, I don't know, what do you think?
I mean, I guess it's better that we sound like where we're from than a California band that sounds like they're from, you know, Tennessee or something. So, yeah, I don't know. It definitely would affect you on some level. I don't know if you really can measure, you know, and put a quantity on what parts influence us, but yeah.
Because the band's, you know, like as he was kind of mentioning, it's like a collaborative effort, and it's like this collective of 5 unique minds kind of, you know, coming up with this one sound, and, you know, everybody's kind of got their hands in certain things. You know, we've got like 4 people singing all at one given time, and we've got, you know, 2 or even 3 people sometimes playing drums, and I think that's part of that collaboration kind of effort, especially with the vocals, obviously, Crosby, Stills, Nash and whatnot, that kind of tends to hint towards that Californian sound, you know? So I don't know what it is that draws us to kind of be like that, but it's just, that's just who we are, I guess.
Because you guys, do you live together as well? Is that old? You still do? Wow, okay.
It's a lot of each other. We just have all kind of thought of the band as like, this is going to be a marriage. Like, we're going to be married to each other pretty much for as long as we can keep the band going, so we've accepted that fact.
And the album is your baby.
Yeah, the album is our child. His first name is Gorilla.
Local Natives there. Rosie, what do you like about that?
I got to know them a bit last year. There was loads of clips of them. They do lots of outdoor gigs.
Yeah,
that was their thing. So I didn't notice until we got them in the studio how absolutely beautiful the vocals are. Mm. There's 3 of them in that band that can sing. which is something that I've noticed with a lot of the bands that we've had in the studio recently, that the male vocals are just absolutely brilliant.
Mm. It's quite interesting that, because I, on the rare occasions when I'm not listening to Magic FM drunk, I've been sort of going back a bit through the music of my youth, and I've listened to a lot of sort of early, late 80s, early 90s kind of indie rock, just for purposes of wallowing in nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's really striking about a lot of those bands, like Ride and things like that, is just the vocals are terrible. Mm. I mean, they're really good records, they're good songs, and they're totally let down by the vocals. Mm. And that's the reason, I think, why Oasis got big and Ride didn't. They were the break, you know what I mean? They were the breakthrough band, is that Liam Gallagher can really sing. And it seemed that not being able to sing was kind of a prerequisite for indie music in the late 80s and early 90s.
Because it was quite masculine? Or?
I don't know. I've no idea. Or maybe just as a reaction against what was in the charts, which was sort of, you know, Simply Red and things like that. Mm. People obviously could sing a bit. But now, you know, you really do have to be able to sing to be in a sort of alt rock band. You think about Fleet Foxes and people like that.
I think that's exactly the success of Fleet Foxes. It's no, even though this band don't sound like them, as far as I'm concerned, people make that comparison because of the male vocal harmonies, but it seems it's more acceptable now, which is a good thing.
Absolutely. No, God, no, absolutely. Makes for better music, I think. Gorilla Manor is available on February the 15th on French Kiss Records. Before we leave you, we've got some feedback from last week's show, from the blog and from Facebook. It was mostly dominated by thoughts on Massive Attack's new album, which got very mixed reviews, and my debut performance in the Music Weekly hot seat, which was widely hailed as the greatest moment in the history of broadcasting. Portishair, like we've done with your name, wrote, "Got a shock when I saw the banner shots of the presenters. I was expecting Paul to be gone, but I thought Rich Hall... thanks. And Anna Paquin were odd but slightly inspired choices." I think you've come out of that a lot better than me.
Assuming Rosa. That he's talking, applying it to the right gender.
I sincerely doubt that he thinks I look like Anna Paquin. That's quite sure. quite nice, isn't it?
I will take that one.
Somebody else said I look like Serge Gainsbourg, for which cheers. Miss Wonder wrote, "Welcome back. January has been a long, dark, miserable month without you. Two requests. One, can we have more Miranda Sawyer on the Music Pod, please?" Yes, she's going to be coming back, I believe. "And two, Alexis, can you raise your voice an octave or so? It's currently too deep to hear over the rattling of the Victoria line. Not that I'm saying Paul spoke like a girl or anything." I had no idea. I was the sort of Barry White of The Guardian. My booming... That's my masculine Hellenic tones you're talking about there. Look, thanks very much for all your feedback. Guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to come and find us. That's all for this week. Thanks for coming in, Emma.
My pleasure.
Hopefully we'll be back soon.
Yeah, apparently so.
Excellent. And goodbye to you, Rosie. I'll be seeing you next week.
See you later.
And thanks to our producer, Pete. Music Weekly will be back same time, same place next week. See you then.